What an intro! Steve Kearney aboard, Steve Thompson here. How you been, Steve?
I'm great after I heard that. I'm not sure what a jerky superstar is. It must be
you've talked about making jerky before.
We've been over this, Steve.
You know, that wild game jerky.
That could be. Okay, we'll just leave it at that, I think. Good afternoon. It's beautiful day out here. It's in the low 80s finally, and fishing's been okay. It's kind of interesting how this water temperature has taken a dive. You know, it was in the middle 80s, 83, 84 just a week ago, and now we're in the middle 70s. You know, everything cooled off a little bit, so fishing has been a little inconsistent because of that. And overall, you know, for August, and I tell people, you know, when they call me up and want to go fishing, and they go, how do you think we're going to do? And I go, hey, it's August. It's like the toughest month of the year, and we just try to struggle through August and get into fall. So that's just what August is. You know, it can be, you know, very difficult some days and really good some days. There's just no consistent anything about August. But it's been beautiful on the water. We've had low winds, you know, for a change, and we're hurting for rain, as everybody is. But so far, so good.
Yeah, we've been barely keeping up on the range. I know a lot are on the rain. I know my rain gauge has not had a lot of use this year. And, you know, I think it's imperative that we do get some moisture before we get into winter, because we're falling behind. I've never really seen... And I grew up along the river north of the cities and have lived most of my life along this river. And there aren't many years where I've seen it moving this slow this time of year. I live above the Coon Rapids Dam, and there's hardly any current. And once you get into August, it really does slow down, but it's been like that way all summer.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I was on the lake this morning. The concrete slab that we back our boats onto to get into the lake was 12 feet from the water. That tells you how low the water is. I mean, it was really tough because the slab was sticking up, and, you know, everybody's finding that too. These slabs usually will end up in the water for traction, you know, maybe 3-4 feet into the water. But when we have low water like this was 12 feet from even the edge of the water. So it's tough. And I just don't know what's going to happen, if we're going to get really good rains in the fall. And, you know, a lot of the sloughs and potholes are dry, you know, mostly mud. And, you know, I'm thinking about the duck season coming up. That's going to have an effect. And there could be a lot of, you know, public areas in western Minnesota and southern Minnesota that are going to be bone dry. So a little nervous about that.
Yeah, and I know, Steve, there's still time on the water, but we are rapidly moving into that time of year where you're thinking about bow hunting. It'll be very interesting to see what you find in the woods when you start checking out stands, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, too. I was going to say that the DNR is now proposing a change in the duck situation, which, now, I'm not a real fan of this. I don't know who came up with this idea, but they're talking about you have two options. You can take your six ducks like we normally do, which in Minnesota is very difficult and very hard to do, by the way, or you can take three ducks of any species and any sex. So I guess the idea is to try to recruit more people. Hey, look, we've got some new regulations, and it's, you know, it's people friendly, but the problem is somebody can take three canvasbacks, or they can take three hen mallards, which is very detrimental to the population. You do not want to take three hen mallards. You don't want to take three. You could take three redheads, three canvasbacks, and normally those, you know, canvasback is one, redheads are two. And to increase that, I think, is not a real smart idea. So you have to kind of choose which way you want to go. And, you know, another thing that's going on is this early stupid teal season that's happening again in September. And this is going to be a good 3 weeks before the regular traditional opener. And the teal count in North America is way down, but they're still going to do the early teal season. So there's some really bizarre things going on with the DNR. I don't know where they're coming from, but from my perspective, I don't know. I just don't see it.
Yeah. And once again, when it comes to the great outdoors this fall, it could be very interesting if it stays this dry, big picture, whatever you're pursuing in the outdoors this fall. But it comes up really quick. I mean, we're closing in rapidly on the fair and Labor Day, and those fall hunting seasons are going to come at us in a hurry.
Yeah, the first one's going to be the dove season on September 1. Yep. That'll be the first time I get in the field. But I will tell you, Steve, up in the northwest up here, the deer situation looks really good. I've seen a lot of does with three fawns, which means it was a really – we've had two mild winters in a row, and the breeding season went well, and spring was decent, and that's really a good sign. Sometimes when these deer are really stressed in the winter and having a tough time, they might have one fawn, maybe two, but usually it's one. But when the conditions are really good, they'll have three, and I've been seeing that a lot. So I think that looks really, you know, I'm just optimistic about that, just seeing, you know, that type of reproduction. So it really looks good so far.
All right, Steve, always good to visit with you. Where are you going to be in the coming weeks? Stay close to home?
I don't know, man. I am tired today. I've been on the water all day and all this week, and I think I'm going to take a day off and then blast around and do a little bit of scouting for upcoming events here and do a little bit of intel work. But, yeah, I'm going to rest and watch the Twins just like you.
All right. Sounds like a deal. Steve will do it again next week.
Hey, it sounds great, Steve. Take care.
There he is, Steve Kearney, stevekearneyoutdoors.com. And, oh, by the way, our outdoors coverage continues on Sunday. Rob Dreuslein from the Outdoor News has a terrific show between 5 and 6 on Sunday. Once again, Rob of the Outdoor News, great guest, a lot of info. That is Sunday between 5 and 6 here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Quick break. We'll come back. Headlines. Lynx win. Olivia Miles not on the national team. There is a great deal of outrage over that, rightfully so. She has swept WNBA Rookie of the Month award, but didn't make the national team. I have a feeling, though, this will be the only time in her career that she's not part of a national team or an Olympic team. She had another big day today. Fee had another good day, and the Lynx win big over Las Vegas. We'll get into all of that here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Twins and Brewers later from American Family Field in Milwaukee. They have a gigantic parking lot. It's the same lot where County Stadium was all those years. And it started out as Miller Park, and then it was renamed, and I think it's still American Family Field. And a lot of Twins fans there. And the Twins, winners on Friday night, so they won two in a row. They salvage the final game against the Royals. And that was a huge comeback win for the Twins. You get swept by the Royals, you might as well pack it in. They get the 4-3 win. Then they go into Milwaukee, and in the Border Battle Series, they're able to beat the Brewers in a wild one, 8-6. The Twins score 2 in the third, 2 in the fourth, 2 in the fifth, 2 again in the sixth, and win at 8-6. So all the runs coming early. Zebby got the win, and now the Twins go at it today. They continue to get not the best injury news. Joe Ryan on the injured list, you may have heard. He has a glute issue. And Byron Buxton, who knows when he'll return to the lineup. It sounds like he's getting close. By the way, Taj Bradley will be on the mound tonight for the home nine. And sneak peek at the lineup. They've already posted the lineup card on no Byron Buxton in the lineup. So we'll have more on that a little bit later on in the program. Earlier today, another matinee. I love the matinees. Once football is over, the NBA goes to a lot of Saturday and particularly Sunday matinees. And I think that is a good thing. Family's out. I know the weather's good, but I think the Saturday matinee, it was an early start. It was on the CBS today, and the Lynx played really well. They moved to 25-7, or make that 26-7 with the victory today. 98-87 at Target Center. Another big crowd on hand for that. Marquee matchup in the WNBA. 98-87. And five players in double figures today. Nafisa Collier, once again, led the way in the ball game today. Olivia Miles, 26 points. Collier, 22. 17 for Howard, 15 for McBride, 13 for Williams. And not only do they lead the league, but barring injury, the way they're playing, they're the favorite to win it all, and rightfully so. It is extraordinary.
Let's go.
I'm all in, Steve.
I'm all in. They beat the Aces 2 days after they embarrassed Caitlin Clark. Do you see that?
Yeah, and you know, I think that game, there was a lot going on. You have Sophie Cunningham and her comments about trans athletes, and it is a lightning rod issue.
Well, they're the biggest threat to humanity at this point, right, Steve? I mean, it's the biggest problem we have.
There's no doubt about it. It is a controversial issue, and she's received a lot of criticism. There was a lot made about her visiting with Cheryl Reeve before that game. Lynx played really well, dominate that game, and then win a big one today. But it is still the regular season, and ultimately, it gets down to the playoffs, and we all know that, how the games are going to be called in the playoffs. But Olivia Miles, and to me, that's maybe the biggest story. She has clearly been the Rookie of the Year, three consecutive WNBA Rookie of the Month awards, will win Rookie of the Year,
hands down,
in the MVP conversation, and didn't make the national team. And I'm trying to understand, but the fact that she just came out of college and there's so many great players in this league and there's so many players that are established in this league, I wonder if it was one of those where they had the short list before this league season started and Miles didn't have a spot. Because if you're starting from scratch, say on August 1, Olivia Miles is absolutely on the team, because Olivia Miles is one of the best players in the game, and I don't think there's any doubt about it. But I think it's a challenge when you have all these veterans and established careers, there just isn't enough room for all the players.
Mm-mm.
But it feels like a snub anyway. I don't know where you come down on this, but this will probably be the last national team she's not a part of, and I would assume just an absolute shoo-in for the Olympics in 28 in L.A.
The hardest roster to make, I think, right now, maybe in sport. Maybe that's a crazy statement for me to make, but I'm just looking at the names and specifically the guards that are included on this team. Remember, there is a lot of hoopla last year when Caitlin Clark did not make this team. And this league didn't exist before Caitlin Clark. Of course, I'm being completely sarcastic, as we've discussed ad nauseum. And we support Caitlin and what she's trying to do and find her best game and her
she's
best self.
She's a terrific
player.
But
there are so many terrific players on this roster, in this league. She is not the only one. She is not the first one. And she is one of the guards that is included on this FIBA roster, along with our girl, Paige Beckers. Fee's on the team. Kalia Copper's
Hopkins
on the team.
Zone.
Yep. Kalia Copper's on the team. She can go forward or guard. Chelsea Gray, who hit two buzzer beaters in Caitlin Clark's face the other night. Can't take her off. Ryan Howard, legend. Kelsey Plum, legend. Like, there has to be some aging out of some of this core. Jackie Young, again, at the bottom as well. But a lot of these ladies, I mean, Jackie Young's not even 30 yet. Neither is Kelsey Plum's 31, 26 for Howard. Chelsea Gray's 33. So there is going to be turnover, but there are always big names left off the roster. And you know who the biggest beneficiaries are going to be for that decision, Steve? Olivia Miles and the Minnesota Lynx. And so who knows? Like, she might have not have gone to all the camps. And so, but you can't ignore the level of play that she's displayed this year. And she's absolutely leading the MVP conversation. There's no doubt.
Yeah, it is just an extraordinary the year she's had and the team around her and what they did while Collier was out of the lineup and Fee has returned. And they had, and I've said this before, and it's been talked about a great deal, they were playing so well without her, they had the luxury to make sure that she was, and this term is used a lot, 100%, where she felt like, hey, I can go out and perform the way I want to perform. And I think anybody coming off any sort of injury is going to favor the knee or the ankle or the hip or whatever. And the fact that, you know, she was able to come out and, you know, had the ankle trouble and sat out a huge part of the season and had the luxury of being totally ready. And it was right before the break that she came back and played great. And now it's like, wow, it is really fun, and it's a great ticket. And I think there is a lot of noise around the WNBA, but I also think it shows that it's arrived. And I wanted to run this by you. So you have the Sophie Cunningham comments about trans athletes and so on and so forth, and it's been a big issue and reignited this debate and put the focus on a player that has generated headlines in the WNBA. Is she one of the 10 best players in the WNBA? No. She's a good player and made a name for herself, and I give her a lot of credit, very active on social media, etc. And then, of course, there was the Caitlin Clark and, you know, the punch to the throat and all of that. And I think there's a lot of casual fans of this league are saying, well, you know, the WNBA and so on and so forth. I think it shows that it's arrived, that the commissioner and what she does, and dodged that interview with Dan Patrick, and we talked about it, and the Sophie Cunningham comments. It shows that, you know, the league is now a player on the sports landscape and has been for some time, and it continues to arrive. Look at the attendance. Look at the television ratings. It matters, and I think the people that are saying, well, you can't really take them seriously because they're not doing this. Hey, every league has their problems, and to say that the WNBA and their issues are unique. The NFL has problems. MLB has well-documented problems. The NBA certainly has baggage and issues. And, oh, by the way, the NHL. We talk about the NHL, and I do all the time, on their lackadaisical approach to the muggings that happen on the ice and the fact that punishment for players and their goon tactics in the course of a game, someone's going to get killed. Someone's going to get paralyzed. So the WNBA isn't unique in their off-court, off-ice, off-field issues.
No.
That's my opinion.
No, certainly not. And as I've always said, they're, I think, the tip of the spear. This league, this environment that they've created, they're the tip of the spear for women's issues, women's rights, women's respect in this society. And if they weren't doing as well, Steve, there wouldn't be so many people trying to tear it down and trying to invalidate it as a product. Because it's working.
And I just think it's preposterous because for every Sophie Cunningham saying what she said and getting criticism or praise, depending on what side of that issue you're on, and we're maybe not going to go down that rabbit hole today. We don't have time. But whether you support what she said or didn't, is another symptom, because it happens all the time where athletes in other big-time sports, there is no doubt it's a big-time sport, and you can't tell me it's not. The television contracts, the new collective bargaining agreement, the attendance in the buildings, the level of talent, and I believe, and I've watched a lot of sports in my life, more than I want to admit. It is quality sports entertainment, period.
It's good ball. It's good ball. Like, how do you deny, as someone who appreciates sport, that, like, Olivia Miles is undeniably amazing? Like, real players, real people that know, respect real talent and real stories. And that's why you're like, well, is Sophie Cunningham part of the fabric? Yes, obviously. And she has a right to her opinion and to say that. But if you look at what she brings to a team, which is a specific role, and what she's asked to do, everybody's got a role in what she's asked to do, you know, that's where it changes. And you cannot deny the high level of play that these ladies play with every single night. Like, they're bringing it. It's great ball. And it's in the best place that it's ever been, with a lot of room for growth, too.
Yeah, but I would say the commissioner, or, you know, the lack of discipline, or they haven't done enough to defend Caitlin Clark or whatever, I just think shows that it has arrived, because let's face it, all these other leagues, the NFL is far from perfect, as we know. Player safety. The fact that the World Cup could afford to put in real grass to protect the players in indoor stadiums, but the NFL and all their billions refused to do it. You know for a fact the Dallas Cowboys at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, for their 8 or 9 home games the Cowboys are going to play down there this year, could put in the real stuff. And they could do that in the Meadowlands, and they could do that at U.S. Bank Stadium. They choose not to. So don't tell me the NFL is perfect and the WNBA is flawed. They're organizations with humans in charge, and they're all going to be flawed. They're all going to have issues. They're not going to be perfect. And hey, the next collective bargaining agreement, that will be one of the gigantic issues when it comes to the NFL, and should be. And the Players Association should go to the wall for it. The league can afford to play on the real stuff. If the World Cup can put grass in these stadiums, and I believe in Vegas and Arizona, they figured out a way to do it. I know in Arizona they roll the field in on a tray. And I think they do that in Vegas too, don't they, Lindsay?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They got multiple floors.
Yeah, they got it all figured out. It is 4:33. We'll talk football. We'll talk Loons. Andy Greeter, Pioneer Press, joins here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Thank you much for joining us on this Saturday afternoon. Steve Thompson, Lindsey Brown, Twins and Brewers tonight from American Family Field. Twins trying to win their third in a row. We'll have much more on that following the news and weather at 5. Highlights from Friday night's wild win over the Brew Crew. Saints still in town. They're playing at CHS Field. The Louisville Bats in town. And Target Field will be packed again tonight for the Savannah Bananas. Andy Greeter joins us from the Pioneer Press. He covers Golden Gopher football in the Loons, so a very busy time of year for Andy. Always good to visit with you. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, good to visit with you, Andy. I was thinking of trying to get into the ballpark to see the Savannah Bananas. I've caught it on TV. You got to admit, it's pretty good sports entertainment. I know there's some that are saying, well, yeah, I don't know. But the fans love it.
I remember when I was a kid and went to Target Center and watched the Harlem Globetrotters and was blown away by that in the mid-90s. And I think this is a very similar kind of thing, right? It's about the spectacle. It's about the showmanship. It's about the entertainment as much as it is and more than it is about the actual sports. So I think if it engages with, you know, young people and kids and families and they're able to come out to the ballpark or the arena to watch it, I'm on board with it. I think it's cool to see it kind of grow over the years. I remember it a couple of years ago and kind of seeing it and going, what the heck's going on here? And kind of seeing it build. I think it's quite a phenomenon.
Yeah, it is incredible. So three sold-out crowds at Target Field this weekend for the Savannah Bananas. Pretty good stuff. Let's get in. We mentioned the Vikes started camp and the Golden Gopher football team started camp. And, Andy, you know, the sense is going to camp, you know, they have a quarterback, but with the portal and all the turnover with every program in big-time college football, you're not really sure what you got. But at least the Gophers have a quarterback to start with going into the 26th season.
I think it's one of the biggest sources of optimism around the program is what Drake Lindsey can do and show his next stage in his development. I thought he had a really strong freshman year, and I think he's got the size, he's got the strong arm, he's got the ability to run a pro-style offense. He's got enough experience, I feel, to take a real big, sizable jump here this year. And you say that there's a lot of turnover on rosters, and while that's true, the Gophers are one of the exceptions. They're one of the highest in the country in returning production on both the offensive and defensive sides of the ball, and I think that's also another source of why I think this could be a potentially good Gopher season here. And at wide receiver, they've got a lot of returning as well with Javon Tracy and Jalen Smith, and they brought in this kid named Noah Jennings from Cincinnati, who I think has shown himself over spring ball in what I saw yesterday and with some of the highlights they put out as a program, is maybe he's, you know, right in that mix of maybe being the number one type of wide receiver. So I think they've got a good stable of three. I think there's a lot of good building blocks. But, it's one of those things where it looks like a promising Gopher year, but obviously it's a daunting schedule in the Big Ten, and depth is always a concern with this Gopher program. So there's reason to be optimistic, but it also could look like it could be on a knife edge like it usually is for them.
You know, Andy, I wanted to get your thoughts about that turnover that most programs go through, and the Gophers have maybe found a little stability with this current group. It seems to me that is going to be the key going forward. Recruiting players, getting them into the program, and then retention. And I think it's true really with any business. When you get a good employee, you want to retain that good employee. And I know colleges are resistant to call them employees, but in reality, some of these kids are making big money. And I think player retention is the next step in big-time college sports. And how you manage that in the course of being able to raise money and keep them around and keep them out of the portal, and maybe new rules and the conferences will be able to implement some order. But getting them in, coaching them up, and having them around for those 4 or 5 years of eligibility is going to be the next step in these programs. And that'll be the challenge for P.J. Fleck.
I think it's absolutely vital for a program like Minnesota that doesn't have the big funds of money to be able to go out in the portal and buy the best players at different programs within a conference. So while the Gophers are in the bottom half when it comes to roster spending, they have to really rely on getting the right guys, developing them, identifying the right guys that want to take a step up or a lateral move within the portal that aren't going to be, you know, the big dollar signings. Yeah. I think that's paramount for them to be able to be successful. And I think when you look at Minnesota, as we've talked about on your show previously, Steve, is the Gophers, like I said, are one of the lowest spending teams in the Big Ten, and they finished in the top half. I think that's an incredible achievement in the toughest conference in the country. So I think that's really good what they've been able to do. But I think there's a little bit of stagnation within the fan base of when are they going to have that 2019 type season? When are they going to go out and win 10, 11 games and go on a run and put it all together again like that magical season was? And I think everyone's kind of waiting for it. I think everyone is satisfied, and the real diehards know how bleak it can be in previous eras of Gopher football.
Oh, yeah.
So to see them to be able to be successful now, I think is a, you know, two-edged sword. I know I'm going back to a sword reference, but it's like it's really difficult because you obviously want more and you want to be successful and you want to dream about the college football playoff, but you also have to understand that what they're doing to be successful now is an achievement in its own right.
Do you see anything in all of these rules being proposed and, you know, what's being put out there about, you know, age and years of eligibility and all of that?
Yeah.
Do you get the sense that that's going to stick, Andy, that, you know, the Big Ten, the SEC, the big players in big-time college football in particular are going to be on board and all of that? And will it be enforceable?
I think that it will be going forward. Obviously, there's a little bit of a clawback by the outgoing class of football
sure.
players and basketball players in particular that want to get the 5-for-5, that they're calling it 5 years to play 5 seasons of eligibility. They're obviously trying to claw that back, and that's kind of stuck up in the courts right now. But, yeah, I do think that it's very streamlining the process. We're past COVID. Everyone that has been a part of that kind of weird time where eligibility was very fluid, that's in the past now. And I think 5 years to play 5 years, and you're able to go out there. Like a guy like Roman Voss, a Gophers true freshman who I think is going to play quite a bit here this year. We got to see him over practice yesterday, and he looks like he has the potential to be one of the young players that can play right away. And there's no limitations with red shirts. You don't have to worry about, has this guy played 4 games? Has he played 5 games? He can play all year long, and he can do it for 5 straight years. We just streamlined the process, and I think everyone's going to get on board with that, and I think it's really going to cause a little bit of an easing of one of the things that's a gripe within college football and college basketball about guys being around 7-8 years. That's going to be a thing of the past, and we're able to just kind of go forward and deal with the paying of players, but eligibility hopefully is behind us, and we've got 5-for-5, and guys can go out and play, and you know that in 5 years they're done, and that's that. I hope that's the way it goes.
And the challenge and all of that, and the COVID years and the medical red shirts and all of that sort of stuff, it just became hard to sort out. And then ultimately, the legal challenges to it, I think it'll be a while before it sorts out, but hopefully it does. And I am not one of those that want to cut out the idea players are being able to wet their beak financially and being able to get a piece of what is a huge pie in big time in college sports. It only seems fair that they're able to reap some of the financial rewards.
100%. Yeah, obviously we're not done with the saga of what college sports is in the broader ecosystem and society, right? I think we're going to have to come to a point where they are, considered employees and they're going to have to collectively bargain, and there's terms set around kind of what their relationship is within the university system. So, yeah, I think we're always going to kind of have this until it's fully regulated and fully implemented, always some sort of angle to it. But I think eligibility hopefully is one of those situations where that's a thing of the past.
Yeah, for sure. Andy Grudy joining us from the Pioneer Press. John Schuster, Coldwell Banker Hotline. The Loons, at the moment, fighting for their playoff lives. Long interruption for the World Cup. They are back at it. And Andy, we've talked about this before. The Loons resistant to spend right now, and you get the sense that they might be in a mode where they need to energize the fans. Right now, they have 24 points in the standings, and on the outside at the moment looking in, Portland, Seattle, Minnesota, all at 24, but I see in the standings they're below the line.
Yeah, they're winless in 9 straight matches. They've been playing in Leagues Cup, which is a tournament with the top Mexican league, and it was a really entertaining game last night at Allianz Field where they're playing a club called Tigres, which is one of the legendary clubs in Mexico, and Minnesota was very good defensively and had the better scoring chances, but just couldn't convert. And it's one of those things where you look at them and you're like, man, if they could just find a way to finish, if they could just find a way to convert on penalty kicks and close scoring chances and headers and free headers and all of those key crucial moments, they're just missing on that final finish. And that's what's been costing them throughout this losing streak and this winless streak. So I think when you look at it, you know, I've heard from sources is they're trying to find a striker. They're putting in some offers for guys, and hopefully they can bring in somebody that can kind of raise the level right now, because guys like Kelvin Yeboah aren't keeping it, and he might be on his way out, and there might be a little bit of a revolving door at striker, perhaps. I think when you look at attacking midfielders, they need some more creativity. They need some guys that can create some scoring chances. They're trying to do that. It seems like one of them might be falling apart in front of our eyes over these last couple of days. I can't really speak with specifics based on what I know, but it's been really difficult for this team to find ways to be successful, to find targets, to be able to sign them at the right price. And what we're seeing is we're seeing a team that's just treading water, and it's been difficult to watch because for the majority of this time after the World Cup break, when they've drawn games, when they've lost games, those fans in Allianz Field are starting to boo the home team, and you never want to see that type of situation, but you also understand why they're frustrated in the product that they see on the field.
Yeah, Mag had it on Tuesday, Tuesday night match, 7:30 at Allianz.
Yeah, so like I said, they're playing in this League Cup tournament with Mexican teams, and the way that they've had a draw last night and lost on penalty kicks and lost to Juarez, which is the last place team in the Mexican League, last Tuesday, they're going to be eliminated from League Cup, so they're kind of a dead man walking in this tournament. And they really, like you said, they're outside the playoff picture in MLS, and that's going to restart next Saturday. So they're going to have to turn their attention to that and get ready. So I think you're going to see a very B-League type team on Tuesday at Allianz.
All right, Andy, always good to visit with you. Thanks for the update.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
There he is, Andy Grittier, Pioneer Press, joining us here on a Saturday at News Talk 830-WCCO. When we come back, quick golf update. They're in Greensboro in a weather delay. This is kind of the final push for the FedEx Cup playoffs. Really, it's all about the bubble and who's going to be in and who's going to be out for the FedEx Cup playoffs. Scotty didn't tee it up this week in Greensboro. All the news at 5, more on the Twins and Brewers following the news at 5. And, by the way, our lineup card at 5:30 here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. Twins Brewers coming up, game 2 of the 3-game set, American Family Field, border battle. Always a fun series. When the Brewers come here, a lot of Brewers fans in town, good vibe at Target Field. Same thing there. Easy trip for Twins fans, ample parking. Quick story about the Saints game. I picked up my oldest daughter and then drove there, got there at like 6:45. So we end up like parking down by the river.
In a van.
We parked our van down by the river. And it was a long hike uphill to Allianz. It was kind of like, this old man, I needed to sit down and have a beer.
How crunchy were your knees?
When I got to CHS.
Oh.
I think I called it Allianz by mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were down by the river and climbed the hill to CHS for the Saints game last night. I was kind of like, for the 848th time in my life, said, yeah, I need to get in shape.
Oh, man.
It was a slog. We parked far away, but we got there late. It's on us. But it was a good time. By the way, Wyndham Championship, Greensboro, final regular tour event. Bo Hosler at 17 under par. Michael Brennan, one back. Tom Kim, two back. These are the guys fighting and clawing to get into the top 70. To get into the FedEx Cup playoffs, not a lot of big names on the leaderboard. Hideki Matsuyama Lurks, Hit Sagala is there as well. But most of the big names waiting for the FedEx Cup playoffs. We have the news. We have the weather at 5. We'll count you down to the Twins and Brewers next.